Christians should operate fully in the public square, and that includes by engaging with the media.
Molly Hemingway talking about her joint presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And one of the things that they can do is encourage reporters to report things accurately and truthfully. They can express their opinions in letters to the editor and op-eds. And one of the things that's important is to just let people in the world know of the differences of opinion that are out there, that Christians don't share a lot of the secular thinking that is promulgated by the media. And so being bold and being able to stand up and simply speak truth in the public square, it's a powerful witness to others, and it's a service you can perform for your community and the country at large.
You can meet and hear Molly and Mark Hemingway making the case for Christians engaging the news media at our Fall Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston, Texas. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
As I said throughout the course of this campaign, Governor-elect Northam is a good man, and I appreciate his service to our country and our Commonwealth, and I wish him nothing but the best success as our 73rd governor.
This is about the Virginia way, and we have just a wonderful Commonwealth, a tremendous amount of potential. And so I look forward to bringing people from both sides of the aisle together to move Virginia forward.
That's Ed Gillespie, Republican candidate for Virginia governor and Virginia governor-elect Ralph Northam, both reacting to last night's election results in the state elections of Virginia. That was at the top, and it followed down the line. It was a sweeping change, a flip, so to speak, for the Democratic Party, at least in their lower house in Virginia. What accounts for it? What do we make of it in terms of the prospects for a Democratic Party that is still reeling from a presidential loss to Donald Trump? And the reactions of those who are watching this, both from the high perch of Washington, D.C., and where the rest of Americans live. Joining us to talk about Virginia's election results, Molly Hemingway, a regular guest, a Fox News contributor, senior editor at The Federalist, and author of a recent column titled Five Takeaways on Virginia's Election Sweep for Democrats. Molly, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It is great to be here with you.
It was probably right as the results came out last evening that President Donald Trump sent out this tweet, his analysis of the results, at least with respect to the gubernatorial race. He tweeted, "Ed Gillespie worked hard but did not embrace me or what I stand for. Don't forget Republicans won 4 out of 4 House seats, and with the economy doing record numbers, we will continue to win even bigger than before." What do you make of the president's analysis of the biggest race down there in Virginia last night?
I think that his analysis is flawed. There were many fathers to this loss in Virginia for Ed Gillespie, and I'm not entirely sure any Republican could have won a statewide governor's race here. This is where I live. This is a state that has gone increasingly blue in recent decades. It used to be a toss-up. You'd go back and forth between Republicans and Democrats, but it's been a long time since a Republican has won statewide election. Donald Trump himself was down 5 points to Hillary, 4 or 5 points to Hillary last year. And Ed Gillespie, you know, sort of a uniquely uninspiring candidate, but I actually thought he did as good of a job as you could be for being Ed Gillespie. He has some things in his past that make him not an ideal Republican candidate, including that he is a well-known high-powered lobbyist in the Washington, D.C. area, which is not exactly what you think of as the ideal candidate in this particular populist moment. So I don't think that the president is right that if Ed Gillespie had linked himself to Trump more, it would have gone that much better for him. I mean, he lost by 9 points. It is true, however, that the other people who ran statewide did better than he did, and they were more Trump-friendly. So I think there is something, you know, but they still lost. So there is something to the fact that if you really excite your own base by showing support for the president, that that might help you out, but certainly not enough for any of these candidates to win because it's a Democratic state.
Former President Obama tweeted as well and simply said, in part, this is what happens when people vote. How do you understand his reaction to Virginia's outcome?
I think when he's saying this is what happens when people vote, he means this is what happens when Democrats vote. And he's absolutely right. It sounds, I hadn't heard that he had done this, but that sounds like a little bit of a knock against his successor as the Democratic nominee for president, Hillary Clinton, who was truly remarkable in her ability to depress enthusiasm for her own base. But it's totally true that the electorate in Virginia yesterday was, I think it was 51% Democrat, 41% Republican. There was so much more enthusiasm on the Democratic side than the Republican side. And I think a lot of that actually does have to do with dislike of Trump and a chance to be voting at a time when you're not having to show support for Hillary Clinton. So this was a story of Democratic enthusiasm. And by the way, I think the story next year will also be one of Democratic enthusiasm, unless the dynamics of the race change significantly.
You're calling this a tidal wave for Democrats in Virginia. Why so? And picking up on what you just said there, what possible indications might it have for midterms?
So people keep on focusing on the fact that Ed Gillespie, the Republican candidate, lost to Ralph Northam, the Democratic candidate. But like I said, Virginia is a Democratic state when you look at statewide races. So that's not actually that significant, although the margin by which he won is significant. What is absolutely stunning is that the House of Delegates, which is Virginia's lower house, had been in control of Republicans 66 seats to 34, and that flipped last night to Democratic control. So Republicans had a complete stranglehold on the House of Delegates and they lost it. That means that it's an actual wave election, an even bigger reason why no Republican, no matter how perfectly crafted, could have won that governorship. But it also means that there's something significant, and sometimes people want some high-level significance. I think it's probably that Democrats nationwide focused like a laser on Virginia and specifically on flipping the House of Delegates. They were testing out technology. They had a lot of money go into trying to flip the House, and it worked. And by the way, they had said publicly that they were doing this as a way of testing this new technology and focus on money in certain races to help out people who don't have money to run big races otherwise. And if it went well, they would roll it out nationwide. So I think people should expect Democrats to be much more savvy about winning back state legislatures, which they have just been crushed on in recent years. Under the Obama administration, nearly 1,000 state legislative seats were lost by Democrats. So partly this is just a natural, you know, pullback, as you see happen cyclically in politics. But also it's that Democrats are focusing on this, and that should terrify Republicans and make them, you know, the national Republicans should have been aware of this. They should have had some plan to combat it. They clearly didn't. And the state Republicans clearly didn't have an effective strategy for combating it. So there, you know, again, a lot of fathers went into this, a lot of parents of this, what happened last night. And that's one of them.
I heard one political analyst compare the use of the technology and kind of the sabermetrics of politics to Moneyball in baseball. And I wonder, what it made me think about was, if there was a presidential election that was low tech and poorly manned, it was Donald Trump's presidential election. Do you think that the Democratic Party has learned the lesson and said, look, let's get serious about this. Let's look at the real numbers and not trust the polls and the pundits, and let's play a little money ball in politics from now on?
Yeah, well, Democrats have actually always been very good at micro-targeting, and they have had some of the most advanced technology out there. They were able to flip Colorado, which had been a red-to-purple state, to solidly blue using technology and messaging campaigns back in 2004. I think the lesson they might have learned from the Trump campaign was not about high-tech or low-tech, but something else, which is, it's actually something of a misnomer that the Trump campaign was poorly managed or didn't know what it was doing. It just didn't go talk to the press about it all the time. Like Hillary's campaign was very good at communicating to the press that they had everything locked up and that there was no chance for Donald Trump. And that message got through to the press very well. The Trump campaign sort of didn't care about what people thought about it, but instead was doing some pretty efficient targeting and messaging, and they just did it. And that's what you saw with the Democrats here taking this House of Delegates. They didn't make a big production about it. They just quietly got to work in local communities, and they managed to turn this House in a stunning, in just a stunning change that I don't think many people expected.
You say it's not only that you lose, but it's also how you lose. How did the top of the ballot Republicans lose in Virginia?
Well, that's kind of what I was referencing with the two statewide contestants who were a little friendlier to, or who were friendlier to Trump, didn't do as poorly as Ed Gillespie. So that does play a role. But I think that, you know, one of the bigger issues would be, and a lot of people want to make this a referendum on Trump, and Trump certainly, I would say, was not just a drag for certain Republicans, but a huge motivator for Democrats. They are still extremely wounded that he won last year. And also there is, you know, a bigger home for never Trumpism, which used to be a sort of conservative opposition movement to Donald Trump in Northern Virginia than you would see in other parts of the country. But I think what really matters for people going forward is some big picture motivation. You know, Republicans need a reason to come out and vote too. And I think that Republicans have erred by always taking their base for granted and thinking they will always be there. Republicans did turn out to vote for Gillespie and everyone else, but I think you just saw they didn't turn out in the way that Democrats turned out. Voter turnout for Democrats was just dramatic and significant and huge. And Republicans need to be given a reason to come out and vote as well.
So what, if anything, does this race mean for 2018?
Right. So earlier in the year, Republicans won four special House elections, and they were feeling pretty cocky, like this was the dawning of an era of Republican dominance, that they had the presidency, the Senate, the House, and everything was coming up great for them. And Democrats were very demoralized. They had tried to peel off some of those House seats, and they had put a lot of money and effort into it. Well, last night, I would say it was much more significant than even the cumulative effect of those four House races, which is Democrats have been frustrated and flailing and feeling like they haven't had any wins. They actually figured out how to do some significant stuff, such as take over a legislature, which, you know, just really no one expected. Everyone thought it was a safe Republican legislature. And so I think people think this is a precursor of 2018. I would only caution that a year is a long time and that prognosticators have been awfully wrong an awful lot of time, and that so many things can happen in the next year that it could be a totally different dynamic on election night next year. Historically speaking, your first midterm for a president, you usually see tremendous losses, and already the House and the Senate aren't that strong Republican to begin with. So barring anything dramatic changing, I think people should prepare for some pretty serious Republican losses next year. But again, a year is a long time, and There are a lot of unknowns that have to be figured out.
Isn't every first midterm a referendum on the sitting president?
Yeah, but that doesn't, not just a referendum, but just a natural impulse to go ahead and vote for the other side. But sometimes that's more dramatic than otherwise. And so I think George W. Bush had a really good first midterm, in part because we had gone to war. But Barack Obama had a horrible first midterm. You know, so it just kind of goes back and forth.
Molly Hemingway of Fox News is our guest. We're talking about Virginia's state election results. When we come back, what does the Republican Party do with Trump if he proves to be a liability in midterms or 2020?
Memoria Press now offers 6 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for students with special needs. These full-year curriculum packages for children with learning challenges enable you to teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art, poetry, science, history, Latin, literature, and Christian studies with incremental classical methods. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR17 to save on resources for your home or school.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. You can promote your confessional Lutheran church and support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining our congregational sponsorship program, the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. You'll find an informational flyer on the support page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline, the Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about Virginia's election results with regular guest Molly Hemingway, a Fox News contributor, senior editor at The Federalist, and author of a recent column titled Five Takeaways on Virginia's Election Sweep for Democrats. You can meet and hear Molly and her husband, Mark Hemingway, at this week's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston, Texas. They'll be making the case for religious liberty and for Christians engaging the news media. It's not too late for you to attend. We have room for about 50 more attendees. You can register online at issuesetc.org, or you can walk up and register on Friday at Memorial Lutheran Church in Houston, Texas. Registration is $80, but that does not include meals or childcare at this late date. The 2017 Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston. Molly, since Donald Trump is going to be with us until at least until the end of the first term and perhaps beyond, what do the Republicans do if this is a bellwether for how things are going to go in the midterms and perhaps in 2020 as well?
Yeah, I have two thoughts on that. One is that they absolutely need to start doing something. And that's not just the Republicans on the Hill, but also Donald Trump. I mean, Donald Trump has accomplished things through executive powers, but part of the presidency is also about working with Congress to pass your legislative agenda. And there are many reasons why that hasn't gone as well as it should have, but the excuses need to just stop if Republicans want to have even a hope of retaining their control in 2018. They have promised voters for decades that they would do certain things. They have no excuse for not doing it now, and yet they're still not doing it. So they really have to start delivering on those campaign promises. Tax reform would be a great first step, but also just, you know, there's many other things dealing with Obamacare, the funding of Planned Parenthood, but this has been taken advantage of, and I don't think they're in the mood to do that. But I would also encourage Republican politicians to think of Trump less in terms of Trump and just more in terms of the electorate. Donald Trump was elected president by the American electorate. He was chosen as the Republican nominee by Republican voters. And so too much opposition to Trump really reads in the minds of a lot of people, and nobody expects like complete fealty to a man like Donald Trump, who has an irregular track record, moral problems and whatnot. But at some point, people just don't really need to hear about people's continued opposition if it contests with advancing the agenda. So I think if people do have opposition to Trump, they need to understand there's a difference between Trump and a Trump voter, and really make sure that the Trump voter feels like he or she is being taken care of by the elected representative, whatever the personal feelings about Trump might be.
2020 is the real question mark. And as yet, with the kind of apparent waning of the Clinton Enterprises star of late in the Democratic Party, I wonder who steps up. And given what you've said before, perhaps with the midterm losses, who steps up for 2020?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. One of the things that helps out Donald Trump is that the bench on the Democratic side is not so hot. A lot of the people that are bandied about are people like Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, who are both extreme and aged, and Donald Trump himself is that age, but you just kind of wonder if that's enough excitement to pull people away from Donald Trump. And the Clinton dynasty is out, and yet a lot of people thought, particularly after what happened in Virginia, that Terry McAuliffe, who's a huge Democratic operative with close ties to the Clintons, will go ahead and announce publicly, or it'll be well known, that he's running in 2020. That is about as much of a swamp creature as you can get. I'm not sure if that matches the mood in the Democratic Party as much as people in D.C. think it will. So just so much to shake out here, but you're going to start seeing people throw their hats in, I'd say, pretty soon.
You talk about Republicans need to make the case for their survival. This is what I would look for personally. This is my personal opinion as an independent. Not the return to 1994, but to some of the issues. To a balanced budget, genuine term limits, not just self-imposed term limits, to a pro-life, pro-child, pro-family, pro-marriage kind of a stance in a general sense. That would catch my interest. That would motivate me. Can I expect any movement in that direction from the Republicans?
So this is a kind of a complicated answer to that, but one of the things I've been thinking about recently is that Republicans actually are doing a pretty good job of matching their views with the views of the base. And they even, when they vote, tend to vote pretty well in terms of what the base would like or what the average Republican would like. The problem is that Congress has, for the last several decades, turned over almost all of its power to the bureaucracy. And so people are frustrated because they're getting hammered by the bureaucracy. You know, a lot of these attacks on religious liberty aren't coming into being because Congress votes them, except insofar as Congress votes for some large program, and then the bureaucracy uses its lack of accountability and its unelected status to go ahead and hammer these social justice issues and really go after the average American. So Republicans continuing to vote well and continuing to articulate what they believe as they have been, I think people will continue to be frustrated until we start seeing some true attempts to root out the frankly unconstitutional powers that have been delegated to the bureaucracy, to the administrative state, and really make it so that when you vote for people, that is where the government lies, and that you have a government by the people that is accountable to the people. That is a very difficult thing to have happen, and I don't expect it to happen. But because it is what needs to happen, and it might not happen, it's, you know, that's the challenge for Republicans. Are they going to be able to keep doing this shtick where they sound like they're good and they actually even vote pretty well, but because they have handed over all this authority to an unaccountable bureaucracy that runs roughshod over American civil liberties, it might not be enough to save them.
Two final, somewhat unrelated questions for you, Molly. What's the latest on the Fusion GPS Russia story?
Well, this is a really exciting, interesting story. Broken, I think just yesterday, was the news that Fusion GPS, which is this opposition research firm that was hired by the Clinton campaign, the Democratic National Committee, to run the Russian dossier operation, which is where they put forth a dossier and they spread it around to intelligence agencies and to the media to create this narrative of Russia collusion. Well, it turned out, as broken yesterday by Catherine Herridge at Fox News, that meeting that Donald Trump Jr. and Paul Manafort and Jared Kushner had with Russian operatives, well, the people who were the Russian operatives had ties to Fusion GPS. And the lawyer at the heart of that met with Fusion GPS's founder and, you know, chief guy just before the meeting and just after, which makes it look really fishy that this is like the centerpiece of the claim of collusion, and yet the group that was putting out the dossier was intimately tied to the key players in it. So there's more to find out about just what that relationship was and also what was happening in terms of what the intelligence agencies were doing working with this dossier operation, and hopefully we will start to get some answers, which have the intelligence agencies and Fusion GPS officials have been putting up every possible battle you could imagine to keep the American people from learning what was going on with that operation.
And what do you make of Donna Brazile's allegations, former acting chairman of the Democratic National Committee, her allegations about the Clinton campaign and its role with the party during the election.
Yeah, that Donna Brazile, who's such a important figure in Democratic Party politics, feels comfortable going after Hillary Clinton in the way she did in her book, is meaningful mostly because it signals that establishment Democrats really would like Hillary to go away, and they think she's a problem, and they think it's totally fine to go after her. I mean, the book itself is about how Hillary Clinton consolidated power years before she won the nomination using the tools of the system. And that is a really interesting thing that actually probably should be looked into. There are aspects of federal election law that may have been violated here. I think we don't know, but we should probably look into it for the sake of the Democratic donors and voters who were perhaps mishandled through this process of Hillary Clinton taking control over the committee. But it's, you know, it's pretty significant symbolically, but it also might be significant legally for the Clinton team.
Molly Hemingway is a Fox News contributor, senior editor at The Federalist, and author of a recent column titled Five Takeaways on Virginia's Election Sweep for Democrats. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Molly, see you later this week in Houston for the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
I'm looking forward to it.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll discuss the vocation of veteran with Chaplain Craig Mueller of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. We'll also have Dr. Joel Olowski of Concordia Seminary answer the question, were the early Christians communists? And we'll respond to email and the Issues Etc. comment line. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.